how nerdy should I go?
Go deep.
Okay,
so, let's do it.
Boy, you're asking good questions, Miles.
Face meltingly awesome.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 98. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and John's out this week, so joining me as co-host is Kubernetes extraordinaire and all-around good bloke, Mr. Miles Gray. Miles, how you doing, man?
Not much, man. Just chilling out after VMworld and, you know, all the sessions and customer meetings and podcasting.
Yeah. Imagine that. So, funny thing, like this week, we're going to be sharing an awesome conversation that you had actually with Chad from Chad Sakic. I used to say from EMC, but he's no longer from EMC. Chad Sakic from Pivotal. And you guys had that conversation once before, as a matter of fact. So technically, this is round two.
Yeah, that's what people seem to make it out as on Twitter. I don't think there was a fight involved, but I mean, we've talked twice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. John and I were talking about, because we got a lot of feedback from listeners about that episode saying, oh, that was a really good conversation. Those two were back and forth, this and that. And it was a positive conversation. There certainly wasn't any competition or anything, but it definitely was, it was definitely one of those things where we did get requests from multiple people. Oh, you guys got to have those two back on again, going at it, so to speak.
Hey, I think we did it again as well. I mean, we just picked up the conversation where we left off and yeah, just nerded out again.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I wasn't even there for this conversation. I had to do one of my sessions. And so I had the pleasure of, like, while editing the podcast, I had the pleasure of listening to it for the first time. So yeah, you guys went at it again, and that was a good conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's nice just to have a different dynamic, you know, different presenters, different style. And it was very much a back and forth, technology, opinions, all that kind of thing. It was just a good conversation.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think it was timed perfectly. You know, whenever you have scheduled a conversation like this and lo and behold, there's an announcement that says, by the way, we've acquired Heptio. Because it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was good timing for sure. It was great for me too, because I hadn't known much about Heptio in the past. So this was actually, it was good information to hear. So it's like being a host of a podcast, but also a listener as well. This is very educational for me.
Yeah, we all learn on these calls, though, really, don't we?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so here is round two with Chad and Miles, where we talk some Heptio, we talk some PKS and PFS, all the Kubernetes, all the goodness. Take a listen.
Okay, all right, and we've got Chad here back on the podcast. John, Miles, it's good to see you guys. I was going to say, Miles has got quite a few questions, but I just, since we're here at VMworld, I did want to kick off with, you know, how's the show been so far?
This is, I learned a lesson last night. Someone reminded me that you count VMworlds not in years, but in pairs, right? So if you count them all up, it's like 23. It's been 12 years. And there wasn't always one in the US and one in EMEA, but it's been a lot. But how is it doing? I love it. It's energizing. It's exciting. It's exhausting. I was up with customers and partners until 3 o'clock in the morning, up at
working hard,
you know, it's professional. And you gotta be on your game, up in the morning at 6, bright and early to, you know, meet customers starting at 8. So, you know, a lot of Red Bull and,
yeah, there's actually Diet Monster in the machine right over there.
Great. You know, it's always great to see old friends. One thing I love always about VMworld is community. And, amazing technology announcements, big business announcements, man, it's,
there's some big ones yesterday.
Yeah, it was big ones yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, talking about that, I mean, sometimes in the past it would be the VMworld Europe would be, it's the little smaller event. It's just a rehash. There's nothing new announced. And then I think last year we had, or either last year or the year before, we had like all the announcements came out of here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had some big M&A and some announcements in Vegas, but here I think the bigger, wow.
I think,
what do you think, Miles? Heptio?
Oh, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
We're talking about something else? Yeah, it was really exciting. You know, in a nutshell, it highlights just a deep commitment in every way. People, money, code, contribution of all forms to, you know, the Kubernetes ecosystem. And, you know, Heptio has got unbelievably talented humans. They're deeply passionate about it themselves.
And two co-founders. I mean, it makes sense.
And, you know, it's interesting. I put this in the blog. I can't name the customers, but it's interesting. Actually, a few of our PKS customers actually said, hey, we want you guys to work actively with Heptio on a couple of fronts, right? So we've always used Sonoboy for conformance testing, you know, as part of the core product team, but Gimbal, Contour, Arc, you know, add critical things that you need. And sometimes they would say, hey, we want you guys to work together because we know how material they are to the ecosystem. I know I'm giving a long-winded answer here, but I'll say something on this that I think is important for people to do, and it's a homework assignment for any listener. So if you go to, I think this is a URL off the top of my head, it's K8S, so kates.devstats.io. You can go and you can see the GitHub stats for core Kubernetes and for the associated projects. And if you scroll down a little bit, you can sort by company. And what I find is that most customers and people in the market, they associate VMware with closed and others with open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think of Pivotal as open because, you know, we were born as an OSS, a company built on OSS projects, right? But that's bias. It's not actually accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the site and you go and you look at the contributions to the core Kubernetes project, and you look at where the listing is, VMware shows up way down in the list.
Right.
However, the default interval is a decade. So if you go and you change the interval to a year, go and do it, homework exercise, look at what happens. Change the default interval to the last month and look at what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And change the interval to last week and look at what happens. Now, this isn't a competition. Like, you know what I mean? But people should know that VMware is deeply committed, and the Heptio, you know, announcement is just doubling down on that commitment.
Mm-hmm. All of our integrations are upstreamed into main repo and everything. So, I mean, it's not like we're trying to keep this stuff to ourselves. We want it to be out there so it's easier for customers to use it.
And I was talking with another customer, Israeli customer, this afternoon. And one thing that we still haven't entirely gotten right is how to communicate the message about, like, the NSXT integration and vRealize Log Insight integration and the Wavefront integration and the VRA 7.5 integration. Sometimes people think that those are required. No, they're not. They're not. Those are actually all open endpoints, open CNI interfaces. We actually support non-NSXT. Mm-hmm. It's just that NSXT makes it better.
Right.
Yeah. Using Wavefront makes it better. It's not that it's closed. In fact, I think that not only is it a great and perhaps the most enterprise-ready Kubernetes platform for customers today, but it's interesting, we're actually perhaps the most open.
Well, one thing I noticed was obviously IBM acquired Red Hat quite recently, and there was a lot of, where did that come from? But
IBM has done a lot of Linux development for a long time, actually, if you look. Yeah. You
know, but it seemed sort of unexpected in the industry, but I haven't seen as much of that around, you know, us acquiring Heptio. It seemed to be a lot more, yeah, that makes sense.
I think everyone said, hey, that makes sense. And to the Heptio people, if there's any of them listening, welcome to the family. Keep doing what you're doing. You rock. You know, I've been part of an acquisition, and sometimes it can be a little disorienting. You know, and the companies are enormous. They can cause your head to spin off.
Especially for a company the size of Heptio.
Totally. Chill out. Keep rocking.
Right.
Keep doing what you're doing. You're great. We love you. Now, on the Red Hat thing, you're right. The industry kind of went like, that makes a lot of sense. And it's a big move by VMware and really a doubling down to the strategy around PKS, the direction that we're taking, and everything. We're great. On the IBM Red Hat thing, I've got to tread carefully there, because, you know, naturally I'm going to have my own bias.
Right.
But I wasn't surprised. I always thought that Red Hat was either going to go to IBM or Cisco.
Or Cisco is the other one, yeah.
Okay.
Because basically, those guys need software IP, you know, because the customers increasingly are looking for kind of a hybrid cloud model. It's, it can be software defined by nature. That's not just marketing buzz.
Right.
And, you know, Red Hat has a lot of good assets. There's alignment on open source, that sort of stuff. There's obviously some stuff they're going to have to figure out, like IBM Cloud Private and Red Hat are not the same Kubernetes plan and approach. But again, I'm sure they'll figure that stuff out.
How do you think Heptio's portfolio ties into what we've already got going on within our own, you know, solution set? We've got PKS. They, like you wrote in your blog, you've come up against these guys in the past for the same sort of deals. So there is some overlap there. Do you think they complement each other? Is there some sort of integrations or what?
Rationalization.
How do you think that's going to go?
So first things first, it's literally a huge injection of great people and talent, which is the essence of making great products. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that I think that's important to understand about this idea of like rationalization and stuff like that is, it's not entirely the case here, right? Because they didn't have a distribution that they sold. What they would go to customers, they'd say, we take, you know, upstream vanilla OSS Kubernetes and we'll make it work for you,
mm-hmm.
right? We'll help you make it work because they were focused on outcomes using Kubernetes. Kubernetes is a platform on which you build stuff.
And consultancy services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the first thing is that nothing changes for their business model, nothing changes for their customers. But our ability to actually, so for example, we've done work on PKS around backup and recovery use cases and using BBR. And, you know, the question is, can we do more with Arc?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, how do those things come together?
Right.
In the OSS world, it doesn't actually need to be rationalization. It can be, how do projects merge? How do they co-contribute?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, there's a ton of stuff people view like the CFCR, which is the Bosch integration with Cates, as being a contrast to the cluster API, and maybe they are, but not entirely, actually. It may actually be a 1+1=2. Maybe we evolve Bosch so that it more deeply integrates with the cluster API.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So what people should expect is fundamentally, just to summarize it, as more contributions to the Kubernetes community,
yep.
faster acceleration of PKS iteration and value. And the other big news from yesterday that to me is, you know, almost not even in the same league, but to me it's kind of close, was emphasis on we're going to do Kubernetes for our customers in every way they want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a service, VMware Cloud PKS, as software that they run and deploy on multiple clouds.
On-prem.
You know, that idea of saying, hey, in the end, it's the Cates API, it's building common control plane, it's building a working common ISV ecosystem. That's ultimately what matters.
Speaking about PKS iteration and multi-cloud, 1.2 came out not long ago. You've got AWS support, a bunch of other stuff in there. You know, it seems to be evolving to become a very homogenous platform across it's a true multi-cloud solution.
And we, I love the period of the early years of product's life. The reason is, like, you're learning stuff, you're iterating fast, you're learning about what the customers really want, what they don't want, and you're adapting, you know, like changing pricing models, you know, so economic stuff, product technology architectures, all that jazz.
It's like vSAN.
Just like, so I remember, like, the, you know, people forget that, you know, vSAN's a success that's years in the making,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I remember vSAN 1.0, 4.0, 5.5. 5.5, 6.
We don't talk
6,
about 5.5.
You know? So it's, but you have to learn and adapt. But in any case,
right?
What we've learned is early on, we didn't know whether customers would actually want PKS in multi-cloud. We now have the data. Basically, 90% of the PKS customers use PKS with vSphere. 60% use it with AWS. 50 and change use it with Azure, want to use it with Azure. By the way, secretly, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, there's already a build that works on Azure, so expect to see that soon. And about 30 and change use it with Google.
Yep.
Now, those add up to more than 100%, so it's not that I'm still a little tipsy from last night.
There's just a little bit of overlap.
It's overlap. The lesson of that is most of the customers actually want, need, and love the fact that it's a common experience across clouds.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, no one wants to do monitoring tool sets multiple times and all that kind of stuff. You know, you build your app, you just want it to work.
It's that. That's the headline. Like, a lot of people forget that it's the stuff that you build around a platform that ultimately makes it work for a customer. Observability, security models, all that jazz. But people are also discovering that not all conformant Kubernetes platforms are the same. You know, the actually, I think it's great that now that all the three public clouds have got multiple Kubernetes offerings of their own, that people can look at this and go, oh, these things are different. And it frankly gives us an opportunity to explain why we think that PKS is the best open, pluggable, multi-cloud Kubernetes enterprise dial tone on the planet.
So with all that said, do you think there's a room for PKS to improve? And in what kind of areas do you think
God,
that
yeah.
there is? Like, what do you see in the future of PKS?
So we're iterating really fast. And the way that this works is actually fascinating to on the inside. So basically, we focus maniacally, the combined VMware and Pivotal team, on five customers. It's not a constant set of five. So sometimes ones come out and other ones come in. And they're big customers, so people would know these by name. I won't name them on the podcast, but they're enormous, right? Enormous financial institutions, telcos,
retail.
Service providers, retail. And the rule to get into, you know, Fight Club, to get into this top five list, is that you have to iterate with us fast so that you're a feedback mechanism and you're going to make the product better. So I look at the backlog every day, and I can tell you what's top in the backlog. Complete multi-cloud, add Azure, very high.
Right.
Lots and lots of feedback around continued granularity, detail around security models. So
Envoy, Istio, AllSpark.
Yeah, so I'll get to that stuff in a second, but I mean something more primitive, right?
Okay.
So how nerdy should I go?
Go deep.
Okay.
So let's do it.
Inside Kubernetes, you know, for those, there's lots of great stuff online. You can go, you can learn. So go and learn, pause the recording, pause this, and then come back, right? But basically, you know, pods are groups of containers that are being scheduled and running on worker nodes. And worker nodes, in PKS's cases, are VMs.
Right.
And VMs are the best place to run containers, mm-hmm. as Pat says, and we believe. There's a container runtime that you use, almost always Docker.
Mm-hmm.
Those pods do their thing, right?
Right.
Now, a pod can run as root or it can run as user.
Mm-hmm.
And this question of like whether pods can are allowed privileged access and,
right.
and how that's controlled has changed a lot from like 1.9 to 1.10 to 1.11 of Kubernetes. By the way, that's one of the reasons why we're so fanatical about how important it is to have PKS be able to update itself frequently, because you know we're releasing fast, Kubernetes is releasing fast, so customers need to be able to update like without even blinking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the customer feedback is like, hey, we really want a way to have policy control and lifecycle of pod security policies that is a way that's sustainable and can work. So that's a high, high priority item, because as soon as customers realize, hey, wait a second, are you telling me the way this thing works is like you could have elevated security privileges from a pod? That's, you know, again, for listeners that are VMware
yeah.
oriented, that's like a VM being able to pop itself up and all of a sudden be a vCenter admin.
This is Linux 101.
VM escape.
Yeah. VM escape. This is like Linux 101, though. You don't want to run stuff as root, typically.
Yeah, now here's the thing that is, I think a lot of people don't know, and this is why, again, I think it's important that giants, VMware, mm-hmm. Pivotal, and Heptio, and others too, we're iterating and we're giving back into the upstream contributions into the community. The way to solve this is to keep refining this, but certain things are still really early. Like, so for example, to use Istio and Envoy, mm-hmm. in many cases, you have to have these very high security elevated privileges for the pods.
Right.
And when people are like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it needs access to those underlying things in the kernel.
But you don't want the implementing of security to undermine security is the paradox.
Right.
Of,
right. So that's a high priority item in the backlog. People love the NSXT integration. So we've got great statistics on customer deployment of PKS without NSXT and PKS with NSXT, and people love it.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's things that they want. So in 1.2, we solved the biggest, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe we didn't have this in 1.1, of being able to have different network policies for deploying different load balancers mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But right behind that is configurable CIDR classes, routable pods, and critically, multiple T0s.
Right.
So the service provider customers that are using PKS want to have overlapping IP spaces.
Mm-hmm. Or even ECMP between them so you have redundancy.
Yeah. So that's coming to a PKS release near
awesome.
You.
Yeah, that all sounds pretty hot.
And then we're iterating fast on the stuff that's on top of Kates. So Istio is part of Knative.
Mm-hmm.
And building developer value on PKS and on Kubernetes generally is something that we're now investing a lot of work on. And PFS, the Pivotal Function Service, is accelerating. I think people should expect that to GA soon.
So tell us a bit more about PFS, because we touched on it last time, but we didn't really talk about what it was. What is the vision for PFS? What's the idea?
I found that this is the easiest way to explain this is to start from the start. Okay, I know I'm long-winded. You guys are very patient.
It's all good. Just happy to hear you talk.
Do you use IFTTT?
Yeah. This, then that. Yeah, that powers my house.
Right. So me too, right? I've got all sorts of, IoT, home automation. Right?
Yeah, my house is going to kill me one day.
but frustratingly, none of it's all part of like one ecosystem. And
yeah.
If anyone isn't using it, you should go and check it out. If this, then that. And if you think about what that does, it says, if this, a trigger event, occurs, then...
Do a function.
Right. And when the event isn't happening, the trigger, it's not like stuff is running and doing stuff. It's literally just sequencing that. Now, this is actually something that's existed for a really long time in programming models. So mm-hmm. this is not a new idea.
It's just event-based triggering.
It's event-based software architectures about how do you write code that is driven by events
mm-hmm.
and then does something and then stops. As opposed to software which is running all the time and listening, like on a port,
mm-hmm.
right? Is listening, on a HTTPS, interface. So that whole model, which is sometimes called serverless, obviously AWS, Lambda is an example. It's an instantiation. And Spring Riff, which is basically a reactive programming framework for Spring,
mm-hmm.
which says, hey, I've got an app that I need to write that by its nature is if this, then that type app.
Right.
Right. This is how you write code that's going to be used for that. So basically what we're trying to do with PFS is we're trying to create an open, multi-cloud, serverless platform.
So whenever you say open, obviously... Docker is the de facto open standard for containers. Is that sort of the idea with PFS?
Yeah. So PFS is built off of a project that where Pivotal and Google are the two primary contributors called mm-hmm. Knative.
Yep.
And Knative depends on Istio
mm-hmm.
For service mesh. It embeds important parts of Riff. So we contributed parts of Riff to Knative.
Yep.
And PFS will be the commercial distribution, commercial offering built off of Knative.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is it means that people will be able to have the idea of serverless, in other words, scale to zero. So when the code isn't executing, the containers spin down and you elastically shrink down to nothing if nothing is needed. It runs on top of Kubernetes, so it'll run on top of PKS.
Yep.
But what I mean by open is it's built on an OSS project, Knative.
Mm-hmm.
It is also open in the sense that it will work on any Knades.
Yeah, well, we're not going to lock it down
we're
to
not
our
lock
distro.
It to our PKS.
Yeah.
So the team that's working on that knows that, hey, if it's not cool to create bindings.
No, because you just annoy customers at the end of the day.
And you annoy them. And it's fascinating that, you know, again, I'll leave the guilty nameless here, but many who are actually associated in the market's mind as being open are actually ridiculously hard bindings. Like they bind their logging mechanism. They bind
key management.
Management. They bind Elastic. They bind logging. And, you know, like the whole CNCF thing is not like an idle sport for Team Dell Tech, which is Dell EMC's contributions, VMware's contributions, and Pivotal's contributions. We fundamentally believe that we have to provide value. There's going to be times where we do that when it's closed. There's going to be times where we do that when it's open. But to not bind our stack together.
Mm-hmm.
To create valued intersections, for sure.
Do some value add stuff, but don't create lock in or lock out.
Yeah, better together is totally kosher.
Yep.
But it's not kosher to create a hard binding. So PFS will be an open multi-cloud function platform that will work on any Knades.
Sounds pretty cool to me.
It's pretty cool. And by the way, that's the vehicle whereby we're going to work on maturing and contributing to things like Istio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for that thing to fly, though, that idea, it depends on there being an enterprise-grade, reliable Kubernetes API dial tone platform that is pervasive and that you can count on.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, what we're trying to do with the PKS efforts across Pivotal and VMware is to make that a reality.
So with all this talk of, you know, new different types of ways of developing software, CI/CD pipelines and all this kind of thing, it seems like there's been a lot of turnover in that particular space in the last couple of years. You know, Docker was, or still is, the de facto image standard, but, you know, Swarm came along and then it went away, and then there was Mesos, and then there was all these things. We're at this point where, you know, sometimes people are like, it's a very fast moving space. What if I buy into the wrong thing? How do we know that there's not going to be something that's going to leapfrog all of this that we just didn't see coming?
First it was OpenStack, then it was unikernels.
Exactly.
And, you know,
yeah.
What are the DevOps hipsters going to demand we deploy next?
So. It's one thing that, so first, I don't want to bury the lead, right? So our belief, and here I'm speaking for VMware and Pivotal, is Kubernetes is here to stay.
Yeah.
It is going to be the container cluster management standard. It has got enough inertia that we feel pretty confident that that it's a platform on which we can build platforms.
Right.
Right. And we're betting the farm.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that's interesting is that sometimes being a fast follower is actually a good strategic move. No one likes to hear that.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, we've got to innovate. And we've got to do things, and we do a ton of R&D that sometimes doesn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Everyone does.
Everyone does. But here, this is a case where, first, people shouldn't feel like they're being left out. The hype cycle on this is through the freaking roof.
Yeah.
Right? It is early days of Kubernetes in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's here to stay. The you know, should I get on the train now? The answer to that is yeah. You know, I do think it's amusing to watch individuals who I know, love, and respect, who are brilliant and curious human beings, which is wonderful, go from DockerCon to MesosCon to KubeCon.
Still going to OpenStack, Tokyo. But.
And, you know, they're basically, if they're doing it for the right reasons, they're doing it because they're curious, they want to do cool stuff, they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
If they're doing it for evil reasons, like, evil, they're doing it because they're trying to do resume-generating architecture. Like, they're doing it, and you know what sucks
Resume-generating architecture. I have met that. I always call them procurement architects.
And the thing is, like, they're damaging the customer, right? Like, because they can't sustain it. and then it ends up...
Nothing gets operationalized. You deploy the new cool thing. You get the dial tone, and then you fly off to the next big whatever thing.
And what I would say to people listening, right, is that this is why I think it's meaningful that, you know, VMware, Pivotal, the entirety of Dell Tech, we're here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going anywhere. Our efforts around Kubernetes are central to the company, critical to VMware from the... How do you create software-defined infrastructure that's developer-friendly,
mm-hmm.
right? Developer-oriented. To Pivotal, which is all about app dev acceleration, like how do we take ideas and accelerate idea to prod, take everything and make a continuous development and continuous integration, continuous deployment model real. To do that, we need to build value on top of Kubernetes. So like we're coming at this from a slightly different direction, but the time is right. Kubernetes is starting to get mature. In spite of like the comments earlier about pod security policies, we have customers that are deploying massive production workloads into PKS 1.2.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've crossed the threshold of our own product readiness, of NSXT's maturity. This is the de facto way that you're going to run containers.
I'm just looking through my list of not so secret questions that I have.
Well, I cannot see the questions. So listeners, these are surprise questions to me.
Sneak a bit.
What have you guys seen that's cool?
This year or just in CNA space in general?
No, just this year at the event.
I've always made this joke that VMworld back in the day, it felt like a storage conference because you'd be like, okay, there are 30. John White and I counted it one time in Vegas, or actually it was Moscone. We're like, there are 34 storage companies here. And I mean,
a little over the top.
Yeah, yeah. The amount of CO2 that was generated by all the like spinning drives on the floor. I'm like, this is a little. And then I remember, like, you know, as HCI was coming up, it's like, you know, this is probably, there'll still be a couple here in a couple years. It's going to be less of a storage show. Yeah. And it's seeing, I feel like that transition's really complete. Like,
it is changing. Like, I've noticed some of the exhibitors, for example, HashiCorp is here. You wouldn't have seen those guys here years ago. The whole landscape of this conference is changing.
We've even gone from like, oh, AWS is here. That's crazy to, oh, yeah, AWS. Of course they'd be.
Yeah, you know, obviously.
I think that's actually something that is, it's beautiful to see mature, that people are starting to grok the idea of don't get into the stupid bar fights, right? Focus on the things that matter.
Solve problems. Yep.
The IT as a field is still growing. We're not a mature field. Revenues across all areas are rising.
The other thing that I think was cool to see is I remember when App Defense was born as an idea, and Tom Korn came over and joined Team VMware.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an idea that is just going to fly. So you know, periodically, again, this is a little. I hope I'm not sticking my foot in my mouth. We've been in this game for a while. It's good. It's good to see you guys. I've learned to be able to sniff out when something is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Not technically, but market wise, customers are going to dig it. It's going to fly. It's going to have some.
It'll have some legs.
It has legs, right? And versus the this is kind of pushing a rope.
Up a hill.
This is a pushing a rock. It's hard. It's versus when you're pushing a rock down a hill, it's like, oh my goodness. Needs a little bit of a push to get going, but once it's going,
it's there.
You run to keep up with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that idea of App Defense is going to be the example of something that's got legs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Simple idea, simple execution, elegant design, core principles right, real problem to solve. So,
there's budget for it.
And it's a huge problem domain.
And there's some more even interesting core stuff that like ESXi on ARM. I've seen some sessions about that kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting applications for that and low power stuff. And
so, by the way,
telco.
Just so people like know, back to the earlier dialogue, like the question I often get asked is like, hey, where are the points of integration between what we're doing inside the Kubernetes space? And it's overwhelming. So like we can use App Defense in a million and one ways,
mm-hmm.
right? In fact, you know, the very ephemeral, very dynamic behavior of the container space in general means that I think the fit is perfect.
Yeah, lends itself exactly to that kind of policy.
Versus hand chiseling static IDS rules.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's now, again, not going to work.
Will we create a hard binding? No.
Mm-hmm.
But man, can we leverage it? Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
So expect to see more on that front. Wink, wink.
Okay, wink, touch. Wink. Yeah.
Securing containers.
Yeah.
Heard it here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sort of stands to reason as a space matures, you focus less on the, oh, look, great, we made it work. It works now. And you're like, well, you know, it needs to be secure as well. And you've got all these other bits and pieces that go along with it. It's not just a, hey, look at my proof of concept. This thing actually runs. It's now, oh, okay, now we need to support this and make sure it's...
Observability, platform lifecycle, mm-hmm. security models. I mean, these are not boring topics. They're actually fun, interesting, and challenging problems, but they're the reality of actually doing something that matters.
And doing it responsibly.
Yeah.
No, no developers gone wild here. So.
yeah, exactly. But
this is a conversation I've had a lot with people is previously, you know, in infrastructure, we would dictate, the in-house ID would dictate, this is what you get. This is what you build on. This is how long things take. And then this new world of people got credit cards and went out and like, I got all these VMs, I'm doing something. And I feel like even containerization was even more speed and, you know, okay, guys, we need seat belts. Yeah. We need, you know, some rules. So it's...
Another thing that I've seen that I saw a lot of this week so far that I think is cool. And again, it's, hey, Yanping, how you doing? My good friend Yanping Li, she's
poking you in the back.
Yeah.
She's the best. Hey, congratulations on 15,000 customers, Yanping. vSAN success through the roof. In any case, so where were we? Other interesting thing. On a little bit of an inside view. So one thing that's been interesting is that as VMware has been running more of their own stuff as SaaS, I can see actually how it's influencing even the non-SaaS products, and it's influencing the product design. So the project...
When we have to manage our own stuff, we're going to make it a lot easier to manage, right? Yeah.
For one, VMC.
Yeah.
Whenever you look at, once we started rolling out VMC and working with Amazon and dealing with these kind of constraints, you see that stuff filter back down into the base product because we have these challenges to address. So why not?
Why not? Now, the thing that I think is, you know, frankly, a huge deal, but it's still, you know, not GA, was Project Dimension. And again, I'm taking a step back here and go like, look at the big customer market problem. The big market customer problem is the on-premises part of hybrid cloud is still too complicated. It's not about like capital costs or software costs. People always get that stuff wrong. They think that that's the problem. That's actually not the problem. The problem is too much complexity, operational costs, and operational rigidity. Right? Life cycle and how elastic can you really be? Right now, HCI, so these ideas take time to mature. So version one is like, okay, let's do converged infrastructure. Most common use case is virtualization. Traditional infrastructure stack design, you know, done well. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay, next step is software-defined data center. And then HCI and HCI tight integration and packaging in stacks that you consume versus constructing. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That goes, and you know, VMware is delightful in the sense that they create ecosystems, they create value, but they also actually destroy ecosystems and destroy value.
Well,
and it's moving.
Yeah. Over time, those stuff, applications naturally present themselves and you evolve your products to suit these new applications.
So just because that last sentence is going to get quoted and used out of context, I want to explain what I mean, right? So HCI, dramatic simplification, software-defined data center, dramatic simplification. More and more, the customers are just going to want it to work the same way that their IaaS works off-prem. So as people use VMC, they're going to say, I want the same operational model and even the same economic construct of the mm-hmm. pay-as-you-go managed service model.
Yeah, why am I on the hook for patching this when I don't have to in the cloud?
Right.
Why am I on the hook for support when, you know, the VMware, you know, SREs deal with it there? Mm-hmm. So they want that end-to-end.
So, you know, as that starts to flow back in the opposite direction, it's the same reason that we have VMware PKS and we have VMware Cloud PKS, right? So those are instantiations of this idea existing in both places. I think that Project dimension over the fullness of time. It needs bake time. No one should get super excited about it. Mm-hmm. And yes, will there be some disruption to the ecosystem? And the nerds in us, I'll speak for myself, the nerd in me, thinks about that through what does it mean for HCI? What does it mean for that ecosystem, mm-hmm. right? What does it mean for people's jobs? People worry about that next. But the ecosystem also includes a lot of SIs. And I'm like, man, if you're an SI that's still focusing your business on base infrastructure integration, like you got to start to move
up the stack. You need to provide more value.
Pivotal's happy to help you learn about, you know, how to build cloud native mm-hmm. applications. And
it's not that hard.
It's not that hard. We're happy to help.
Yeah.
Just getting things out of a box, racking them and providing, you know, vSphere dial tone is not an end game in and of itself.
I think that what people don't necessarily understand is that there's massive companies whose entire business is, you know, billions of dollars built off of this. They're going to look at that and they're going to try to stop it. But, you know, frankly, VMware has disrupted the market. They're going to disrupt the market again. So hang on to your hat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And roll with it.
Yep. I'm conscious that we're sort of running out of time here, but I do have one more question.
Go for it.
Is this the year the Leafs go deep into the playoffs?
Yeah. So Austin Matthews getting injured, you know, was a big deal, but I think so.
You heard it here first, huh?
I think so. It's and I got to tell you, Toronto will burn to the ground if they win.
Finally.
So like literally my house, you know, unfortunately will have to get, you know, take the insurance policy and get doubled down on coverage. But I'm pretty bullish actually.
Yeah. All right.
I love, you know what I love, by the way, the thing that I think is so cool about that is totally rebuilt the team. Rebuilt the team, took the time to do it right, build a roster of like young, incredible talent with great coaching.
A lot of parallels here.
You can draw the parallels.
Mm-hmm.
Go Leafs.
Oh, wow. I followed a little bit of that. So. Well, Captain Canada, thank you for coming on the show. Open invitation. You ever want to come back?
It's my pleasure, fellas.
Good to chat again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's round two. Chad and Miles talking about PKS, PFS, and also the new acquisition from Heptio. That was a very educational conversation. Miles, how'd you like being a podcast host?
How do I like being a podcast host? I mean, John.
Yeah, you drove the whole conversation, man. That was like you.
No, it was John. It was all John, man.
Oh, John knows when he's out of his depth. He did the right thing. He just sat back and just put the mic in your face and said, run.
Hey, honestly, doesn't feel like a podcast. I could sit down with Chad anytime. We could just, you know, shoot the wind and this is what happens.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's not your typical exec, is he? I mean, dude is, he's all in it, man. He understands the tech at a very, very low level, which is nice to nerd out with.
Absolutely. And you know what? Maybe there'll be a round three one day as well. I mean, there's a lot of talk about in this space, a lot of advancements. So who knows?
Oh yeah. Chad Miles. We'll do it. Round three. You heard it here. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Chad and Miles for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.